You are listening to BensTorah.com.
We're going to be learning an important sugya, the sugya that is actually halach l'maisa, but hopefully we shouldn't have to deal with it. But I have gotten these questions, and I've gotten these questions sometimes under very extreme duress. One particular situation, I was called late in the evening, not too late, but late in the evening, and I was called by a frantic individual, a member of the community, and they said, I'm here with Hatsala, and my mother is whatever the situation is, and I want to know if they should intubate her. And I said, well, you sort of, this would have been very good if it was discussed at greater length and in a calmer situation, a year ago, instead of, as Hatsala is about to pounce and start an intubation process. And we had to deal with the very difficult questions and situation and the medical, very super speedy review of her medical situation and analysis of the halachic situation. And we had to respond on the spot because the Hatsala needed to know what to do in seconds, as seconds were counting. That's not the way to deal with this issue. The way to deal with this issue is for a person, when everything is good and healthy, to contemplate sort of what they sort of anticipate is the way that they would like to be treated. Now, it's important to keep in mind the value system that we use when we talk about life, extending life, and I'll talk about the issue of DNR, do not resuscitate order, or do not resuscitate directive. Most of the time when a person is admitted to a hospital or to a nursing home, one of the first questions they will be asked is, what do you want to do about this document, the do not resuscitate document? If something, God forbid, would happen to an individual, if a person would suffer cardiac arrest, a heart attack, or some other similar sudden respiratory illness, and they need to be intubated or resuscitated, do they want to have that resuscitation? Now, of course, you're going to say, well, of course you have to save a life. There's a mitzvah of numerous mitzvahs. We have a mitzvah of v'chai b'hem. We have a mitzvah of lo samod adam re'acha, which is probably the most famous, that obligates us to save a life. We have a mitzvah of hashoas aveda. If you have to do hashoas aveda on a person's property, certainly you have to do hashoas aveda on a person's guf. That's one side of the coin, that we have, of course, an imperative to save lives, which is obvious to every Orthodox Jew. We're also very nervous sometimes about potentially a person being in pain. There's nothing more frightening than a painful death, Rahman al-Islam. Nothing more frightening. I'd like to share with you, before we begin the discussion, the halachos of can a person choose a DNR, choose a do not resuscitate directive, that the hospital and medical professionals are obligated to obey legally. How do we look at a life when it is not necessarily a pleasant life? What is the Jewish way to look at that? And I think if we couch the halachic sugya of a DNR after we begin to a little bit appreciate what it means, this concept of sanctity of life, we'll be better tooled to deal with the halachic intricacies. So if you look on your sheets, I'd like to go through a piece from Shlomo Zalman. So the Minchas Shlomo, Shlomo Zalman Orbach was in one of his shilas is dealing with this issue. And the issue that he's dealing with is somebody who's Mishutak. Mishutak means somebody who's completely paralyzed. And the question is, how do we view somebody who, to the secular eye, seems to have a pointless or purposeless life? Look at what the Rav Shlomo Zalman writes. Hinenu mitzuvim v'gam chayavim v'shtada v'kum v'asei. We are obligated to get up and act l'harachas chayim shel mishutakim, to lengthen the lives of mishutakim, people who are paralyzed, meaning fully paralyzed. V'muchola v'zil. So first of all, if they're not sick, of course you have to treat them, to make sure they'll be healthy. And even if they're ill, so you still have to do whatever you got to do. Chayavim v'adil hizdariz batzalasu gamachal alavis haShabbos. Why? Don't they seem to have a pointless life? Isn't their life meaningless? Says Rav Shlomo Zalman in the second line. What's the concept of chayim for us, for a Jew? Ke'inyan shel chayim ein lanu shum knei mida. We don't have any yardstick by which kamalim dod es yokram b'chashivusam, we can't evaluate people, the value of people's lives at all. Not only do we not have a yardstick to evaluate the value of life, but even when it comes to Torah mitzvahs, let's say you have somebody who's too old to do a mitzvah, who's too mentally disabled to do a mitzvah, who's pater from mitzvahs because they're a chayrish and a shota and an onus, and are you allowed to be mechal Shabbos for such a person, even though they can't do any mitzvahs? 100% yes, a resounding yes. Ve'enu yachol lasas shum mitzvah v'chayav himra. And not only that, not only can they not do any mitzvahs, but their entire life is nothing more than a masa, a burden. It's a terrible burden on a family, on society. It causes bitul Torah for the family. And besides the pain that the individual might be undergoing, so too the family is experiencing incredible suffering. Nevertheless, mitzvah b'gdoli Yisrael. Who has to be mechal Shabbos to save such a person who, to the secular eye, has a worthless life? It has to be the Talmidei Chachamim, are the ones that should jump to the opportunity to drive into the hospital to Mechal Shabbos. Not only that, what about if they're actually enduring pain? And here, we see something fascinating. V'od Yosem Yisrael Nirlani is Daiti, says the Shlomo Salman, Afilim HaChol Mitztar Harbe, even if he's enduring tremendous pain. Shemitzat Halacha, it might even be permitted, as we're going to talk about shortly, it might even be permitted that to daven that they should die. As we'll see in a moment, we're going to get into that sugya first. At the same time that you're davening that this person should die because of their incredible pain, you know what you have to do? You have to be mechal Shabbos to save them. Isn't that remarkable? That on one hand you're davening that they should die, which again we'll talk about, but as you're davening for them to die, you're being mechal Shabbos and running around and dashing out to be mechal Shabbos to save them. Fascinating. On the other hand, if you have a person who, a fabulously wealthy person, and he has all of his wealth in his house, and his house is on fire, and you want to put out the fire, it's just a malach Hashem and tzricha l'gufa, and it's going to wipe him out completely and depress him entirely. You're allowed to do an issa d'rabbanan and put out the fire? No. No. What do you see? You see that the value of life has nothing to do with wealth. The value of life doesn't even have to do with Torah and mitzvahs. The value of life is the kedusha of a nefesh yehud is infinite, and therefore, with that in mind, it becomes even more, I don't want to say burdensome, but more complicated, the shaila that we have to discuss tonight, which is, can a person choose not to continue to live? Can a person choose not to be resuscitated? Before we get into the sugya, I have to start with one thing that is clear and will not be subject to any machlok, because everyone will agree to the following point. Assisting somebody to die or killing somebody who's enduring incredible pain is usur and is ritzicha according to every opinion. Physician-assisted suicide is absolutely usur for a Jew to assist somebody else in killing themselves, for a Jew to kill somebody else, even if you call it a mercy killing. There's going to be one gemara that's going to be a little bit complicated. Does anyone think of one gemara where you see a mercy killing in Chazal, where somebody's enduring tremendous pain and you do something to actively kill them more quickly? When Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion was teaching Torah Barabim under the Roman decree not to teach any Torah publicly, and they caught him and they wrapped him up in a Sefer Torah and they lit him on fire and they put sponges of cotton saturated with water on his chest to keep him alive. And what did he say? He told the Roman executioner, if you take these off me, you'll be zochet to chayei olam haba. And the Roman executioner took off the sponges and hastened his death, killed him early. That was mercy killing, right? That was mercy killing. And a baskel comes out and says, this Roman executioner is zoch l'chai lo mava. So that's a little bit complicated. There we see that mercy killing, at least in that situation, was acceptable. But putting that case aside, all the poskim from right to left and up and down all hold that to ever actively try to hasten death or kill somebody because of their pain, because of their suffering, that is on all counts not acceptable. No one allows that. There's not a shita that would allow that. Okay. Before we, again, one more word of introduction, is the concept that we shouldn't be a fool to think that all Chazal or all the Torah cares about is life and isn't aware of the pain and suffering that a person can endure.
That's not true. Because I'll show you Gemara, I mentioned it between Melchamai, the Gemara and Ksuvis, Taflam and Gimel and Beis on the next source, talks about Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah chose to die instead of doing Avodah Zarah. And the Gemara says, you know what? I wonder if they wouldn't have given him the choice to die, the way I said it between Melchamai was, you only die once, right? You just have to jump in the furnace and you're dead. It's over. You only have to do that once and then you finished. You didn't do Avodah Zarah. Hooray, you won. But says the Gemara in Ksuv Islam and Gimel, if they would have been tortured, if they would have gotten Malkos and been tortured and had to suffer in order to maintain their stance to not do Avodah Zarah, maybe they would have fallen. Meaning, what does the Gemara say? The Gemara realizes, the Gemara recognizes that it's easy to jump in a furnace and kill yourself once than to live in pain. And even if somebody has the power to be Mosu Nefesh and die for a Torah and die not to do Avodah Zarah, who's to say that they'd be able to withstand suffering? And it could be under torture. They would even somebody who's willing to give up their lives for Torah and not to Avodah Zarah, maybe when it comes to, if they would, God forbid, have to endure torture, they might not be able to withstand the Nisayon. You see clearly from Chazal that Chazal understand the possibility of elongated pain, elongated suffering may be worse than death. So we realize that Chazal have a very, very realistic perspective, a very human perspective of what it means to endure pain. And with that in mind, let's try to begin the sugya. The first part of the sugya is going to relate to could you daven for somebody to die? And this is you're familiar with one or two sources which we'll be able to go through. We'll analyze, and there's going to be some surprising analysis in the Achronim when we get to this. But the Gemara Ksuvis Kavdalid, with the next source, Kavdalid Amarav, talks about Rebbe. Rebbe, at the very end of his life, was a ghostface, or was very ill at the end of his life. And the Chachamim, Gazru Rabban and Tanisa, they had a Tainis, and they were davening Rebbe Yudah HaNasi, right? The Gadol Hador, the Nasi Hador, and they did everything that they pounded the heavens for him to live. And the maidservant of Rebbe had a little bit of an inside scoop. You see, all the Talmidim were sitting in the Beis Medrash, and in the Beis Medrash, you know, far away from Rebbe and his real life, they were davening for Rebbe to live. The maidservant saw that he must have had some kind of gastrointestinal problem. He was back and forth to the bathroom, putting his tefillin, right? He wore tefillin all day, taking his tefillin on and off, and it was a tremendous pain that he was encountering. And the maidservant said, Hashem, please ignore the people down here and listen to the malachim up there who want to take his life. The problem was that the Chachamim were davening. And so long as the Chachamim were davening, Malach HaMavis couldn't take his life. What did she do? She took some kind of drug, threw it on the floor in the middle of the Beis Medrash. There was a shock, you know, silence. You know, sometimes in the Beis Medrash, there's a loud bang. The guy's learning this Chavrus, he wants to make a point. Bangs on the table. No one realizes that. They think it's like an official bang. And all of a sudden, there's silence. And that's what happened. She dropped this kad on the floor. Silence. They stopped davening for a moment. At that moment, Malach HaMavis comes, and Rebbe dies. That's the Gemara. The question is, what do we do with that Gemara? What are our choices? One choice is to paskin like the maidservant of Rebbe, but I think a more intelligent choice would be to paskin like all the chachamim of the generation, all of his talmidim, all the Ibn Yeshiva, all the rabbis who were in the Beis Medrash davening that he should live. Wouldn't that make more sense? Maidservant, I don't know if she's Jewish, as opposed to all the chachamim of the generation, all of Rebbe's talmidim. Of course we'd listen to the rabbi. But if not for a Gemara in Nedarim, on the bottom of the page 1, there's a Gemara in Nedarim. The Gemara in Nedarim, Daf Mem Amud Aleph, talks about Bikur Cholim. And it says that if you do Bikur Cholim, you cause the person you're visiting to live, you bring life to the person. And if you don't visit the person, this is scary, you cause him to die. What? What do you mean you cause him to die? The Gemara says, maybe when you visit him, you daven for the person's welfare. But so that's a good thing. If you don't visit him, you're not going to daven. And the Gemara says, you will not daven for him to live because you didn't see him in pain. Nor will you daven, you lose the opportunity to daven for him to die. What does that mean? Says the Ran over there in Adam Daf Mem, you see from this that sometimes it is good to daven for somebody to die. If you would visit the person and see that they're very sick and in pain, you could daven for them to live. Or you could see, because you see their pain, or you could see that they're in such pain and there's no hope for them, you should daven for them to die. And if you only have visited them and seen them in their pain, then you would have had that sensitivity to indeed daven for them to die. And on that, the Ran says, Ta'amim, I have it underlined on the top of page 2. Welcome, Rav David. You can take source sheets from the top of page 2, fill your plate. Ta'amim shetzarech levakish rachamim alachola sheyamos. Sometimes it's appropriate to daven for somebody to die. For example, kagon shemitztair hachola b'chol yoharbe, if the person is enduring terrible pain, v'i'efshar lo sheyichyan, he's not going to be able to live. And what does he prove? What does the Ran use as a proof text? Of course, the story with the maidservant of Rebbe. What does he see? We see from the maidservant of Rebbe that she died and that Rebbe should die. What do you see from this Ran? You see that this Ran is passing not like the rabbis of the generation, but rather like Amsei the Rebbe, like the maidservant. So this Ran is the source that from which we know that a person can daven and should daven. Right? The Gemara says, if you don't do Bikur Cholim, you're doing a terrible thing because you don't have the opportunity either to daven for his refuah, or if need be, to daven for his demise, for the person's demise. So it sounds like it's prop, not just it's permitted, but under certain circumstances where there's terrible pain and the person's not going to be able to live, there's a terminal illness, they're not going to be able to be healed, you should, it sounds from the Ran that it's proper, they should daven for them to die. Comes the Tzitz Eliezer. Now, by the way, what I just told you is indeed the psak of many poskim, Rav Moshe, Rav Shlomo Zalman. They hold that if a person is very ill, terminally ill, and they're suffering, the proper thing is to daven for them to die. Now, we saw that even when you have to daven for somebody to die, you still mechal Shabbos if they, you know, have to go to the hospital. That will still say, and that's what Rav Shlomo Zalman told us in the first piece. But I want to share with you a very fascinating Tzitz Eliezer. Eliezer of Aldenburg, the posik of Shai Tzedek Hospital, of course. Look at the next source on page 2. And says the Tzitz Eliezer an interesting point. He says, this Ran that we just learned together, who says that it's not only okay, but perhaps appropriate to daven for the death of a patient who's very ill, in a terminal illness, that's a Ran. That Ran is not quoted in the Rambam. It's not quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. It's not quoted as one of the opinions in the Beis Yosef. Says Rav Tzitz Eliezer, this Ran is a great collector's item, but it's not brought in the Halacha Sfarim. And therefore, the very fact that it is omitted from the Sifrei Halacha, from the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch and the Rush and the Beis Yosef and the Tur, the very fact that it's omitted from the Shulchan Aruch and the Poskim, that shows that we don't paskin like this Ran. Not because anyone says we don't, but the omission thereof, the omission, the fact that it's not cited, that's not quoted in any of the poskim, even though, yeah, there's a Ran who says you should daven for somebody's death, but it's not quoted in the poskim. So says it to Eliezer, we don't paskin like this Ran. You have no right to daven for somebody to death. And I'll prove it to you. You know what the proof that you can't daven for somebody to die? What would happen if this person would develop a fever? What are you supposed to do on Shabbos? Take it to the hospital. Call Hatzal or drive to the hospital. So how could it be, says it to Eliezer, that you're davening for him to die, but you're going to go ahead and be Michal Shabbos? The fact that you're supposed to be Michal Shabbos shows that we want that he should live, that we want him to live, that we'll do everything that we can to make sure that he lives. So how could you say that you're allowed to daven for him to die, but still try to make him live? Furthermore, if you look carefully, look at the Lashon of the Tzitz Eliezer in the third paragraph. He quotes a Rambam. The Rambam is talking about, and a Shulchan Aruch says, and let's say you find somebody, you know, when they had the surfside collapse, let's say they would have found somebody underneath the rubble, and the person is crushed, and the person will be able to live only for a few more minutes. Says, you're allowed to, of course, be Mechal Shabbos, and take him out, even to help him live for another minute or two. Chayisha, just for another few minutes. Now, let's think about this. Those Chayisha are pleasant moments or moments of suffering. They're terribly, he's in terrible pain. There's a building collapse on him. And he's probably going to be screaming, don't help me, I want to die. I can't live like, I'm only going to live anyway for a few minutes. I can't deal with this suffering. That's what he would say, right? And what's the halacha? That we save him. The Rechal Shabbos for him. So therefore, says the Tzitz Eliezer, the very fact that you're supposed to save him is the biggest proof that you can't daven for his death. You could stop davening for him to live. That could be, but you can't daven for his death. Just don't mention it. Don't mention a word. Don't daven about him. No one questions that. Yeah, there's no problem for just not davening for somebody. You can not daven for somebody.
Because it's our option.
But the Tzitz Eliezer, according to Tzitz Eliezer, he sounds like he says that might not make sense. Because if you're supposed to do anything you can, it would be Michal Shabbos to make him live. So it stands to reason that you should daven for him to live also. So the Tzitz Eliezer happens to be the odd man out. He's the most extreme opinion. And we'll see that this opinion that he has about not davening for somebody's death is also going to be a foreshadowing of what he's going to hold about DNRs, as we'll see in a few minutes. Because he says you can't, life is life. And we have to prolong it, halachically we have to prolong it, just like you have to prolong it, al pi halacha, to be mechal Shabbos, so too you have to daven, that the person, you can't daven that the person should die. Now it happens to be that in the next source, on the top of page 3, I have a small quote from Dr. Rabbi Bleich Shlita, Rabbi Bleich, who I was zochet to learn in his Yadin Yadin Kolo at Yeshiva. And of course, he's so respected among the poskim, especially in areas of technology and medicine. Rabbi Bleich has a great line. He happens to be a brilliant man and an incredible writer. So if you look at what I highlighted in the yellow, I don't know if you could see it highlighted in yellow or some towards the bottom, last paragraph. Although man must persist in his efforts to prolong life, I mean, you have to mechal Shabbos to save somebody. You have to save a life. He may express the human need and concerns through the medium of prayer. There is no contradiction whatsoever between acting upon an existing obligation, meaning you have a chiyuv of hatzalah, you have a chiyuv lo samal damriyecha, you have a chiyuv to mechal Shabbos, do it. But at the same time, look how he says it in his incredible words, the last underlined line. There's nothing wrong with pleading to be relieved of that response, of the further responsibility. You have a responsibility to save his life. But you can ask Hashem to be relieved of that responsibility to save the person's life. Meaning, it's not a stira. The Tzitz Eliezer says, if you have to save his life, you can't daven for him to die. It doesn't make sense. Rabbi Bleich says, no, it's possible you have to save his life. But you say, Hashem, let this situation be that I don't have to save his life. Let him die. So I don't have to save his life. That's okay. So that's Rabbi Bleich, we'll call it a kula. And as we get into the Shittos, you'll see why it's important that these two opinions hold. Rabbi Bleich says you can daven for somebody to die. And the Tzitz Eliezer says you can't. Hold, you can't daven for somebody to die. Most other poskim say you're allowed to daven for somebody to die, like the simple reading of the Ran. But the Tzitz Eliezer says it's a Ran, but we don't pass it like the Ran. Fine. Because that's an ace. Yeah, I don't know if you're supposed to daven for an ace. It's a tefillah shav, right? You're not allowed to daven for an ace. The Mishnah Bracha says that if a baby is already conceived, already 40 days past its conception, it's either a boy or a girl. You can't daven. There should be a boy if you want a boy or a girl. It's right. It's tefillah shav. You're not allowed to daven. It's tefillah shav. If this person has a terminal illness with whatever that's spread all over, you can't daven. Then it should just disappear. Okay. If you're daven ambiguously, so you daven ambiguously. So I'm telling you that most poskim say that you're allowed to daven that the person should die. Maybe even you should. The Ran sounds like you should daven that he should die. If they're in a terminal illness and they're in incredible pain, and that's the only way for them to be relieved of their pain, as is sometimes the case. Rabbi Yochanan's colleagues, I don't remember that Gemara. Okay, fine. I didn't see that by the poskim, but I hear that. That's a chiddush, because that's even an emotional distress. That I don't know, because then you could daven that he should be emotionally happy instead of daven that he should just drop dead because he's sad. You know, if somebody's depressed, you should, I don't know if you have to doubt they should die. You should say, let them not be depressed. Let Hashem take away their sadness. Okay, let's move on. Now we're going to start getting into, until now we're talking about that. We talked about a little bit of hashkafa. We talked about davening. Now we're going to get into the halachos, the nitty-gritty halachos about how to deal in the hospital, in the ICU, and in the latter stages of a patient's ICU experience. So it says the Gemara in Shabbos, Kufnun Aleph, says the Mishnah in Shabbos, Kufnun Aleph, Amud Beis. This is on the middle of page 3. It tells us how to deal with a goseis. Balacha with a goseis. I'm sorry, here it talks about a dead person. Eim ma'atzmenes hameis b'Shabbos. You're not allowed to close the eyes of a dead person on Shabbos. Lo b'cholim yitzias hanefesh. When a person's a goseis, as their soul is leaving them, you're not supposed to close their eyes. Unrelated to Shabbos, correct. As we'll see in the next line. If a person closes the eyes as somebody is dying, you're a murderer. What do you see from the Gemara? The Gemara says that if you touch, you move a person who's on the way out, the movement that you move them, unless it's therapeutic. If it's therapeutic, then it's permitted. But if you move a body that is on the way out, you might have been caught the cause of the death and caused the death to die earlier, and that is a shofech dam. Says the Gemara, Tan Rabbanam, Hama'atzmo im yitzias hanefesh, somebody who closes the eyes of somebody as they're leaving, harez a shofech damim. And the Gemara gives a very interesting mashal. The Gemara says, if you have a flickering candle, that's what a goseis, a person in the throes of death, is compared to. And the ner shekava v'halechis, it's flickering. What happens if you put your finger on it? You just barely touch it. You barely touch it, just with little fingers touch. You extinguish it, right? Miad kafsa. So too, if you have somebody who's a goseis, just a tiny little touch could make them die, could make their life flutter away. On this, I want to ask you a question. Let's say there's a goseis who's enduring incredible pain, suffering terribly with a terminal illness. Are you allowed to touch them? I'm not saying to kill them. Touch them.
Just touch them and hear them. I've got the impression touching is not the same.
So that might be therapeutic. If a person would be stroking their hand or massaging them, that might be therapeutic, and it's emotionally therapeutic. But that's also something. I'm talking about something that's not for their betterment. It's not to help them live better or longer or more pleasantly to shut their eyes. Shutting their eyes is to the contrary. It's getting them ready for the next stage. So if it's therapeutic, I don't know. If it's therapeutic, if a person is in the last hours, and a loved one would be stroking their hand, that would probably make them feel better, and that would be therapeutic. So that would, I think, would be fine. Here we're talking about we're not doing something to help them. Let's say that, I'll give you an example. They're on the bed in the ER, okay, and you want to move them out to give more room for more people to come in. But if you move this goseis, that movement might be touching the flickering lamp and might cause them to die earlier. So to bring in the kid with the broken leg, you have no right to move this person who's in this situation of being a goseis to help the kid with the broken leg have a bed. If a guy is coming in and he's in anaphylactic shock, or he's coming in with a heart attack and you have to save his life, then it's a more complicated question. Are you allowed to touch him or move him to save another life? I'm scared to go there. But for something like a broken leg or some other, somebody else is coming into the ER with arm pain or wants to test or something like that. So then you wouldn't be able to move them from the ER. As long as they're in that bed, you can't move them if they're a goseis until they expire. Moving the bed sounds like it's the same thing. I don't think there's a difference, because they, if you shake, Did you ever you went to sleepaway camp and you slept on a double decker on a bunk bed? You could stay still. The guy on top of you or on bottom of you gets into bed. You feel it, right? So if a person, you know, I think even if they roll, okay. The Aruch HaShulchan talks about this. Look at the Aruch HaShulchan 3/4 of the way down, page 3. He quotes the fact that a ghost face in halacha, somebody who's in the throes of death, is considered a chai l'chol davar. He's considered completely alive. You can't kill somebody. You can't murder. You murder somebody who's a ghost face, you're a murderer. V'asu la'asos lo davar she tekarev misaso. You're not allowed to do anything to bring them closer to death. Wait a second. What if he's suffering? Maybe if he's suffering, can I touch him? Can I close his eyes if he's suffering? It's the biggest. He would love to die. He's in terrible pain. Maybe in such a pace that you're being a kind. I understand you can't kill the guy. You can't shoot him. You can't, do something bad. But to touch him, that will get him out of his misery just by touching him. Maybe that's okay. V'afa pisha anu roem shemitz tar harbe begesi saso. V'tov lo hamaves, says the Aruch HaShulchan. Mikol makom osur lanu lasos dabar lekarev misaso. You can't do anything that hastens death, even if it's nothing more than a touch. Again, if it's therapeutic, you're rubbing somebody's hand or you're massaging somebody, that's therapeutic. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about touching them for the purpose of hastening their death. Nothing at all. You can't kill a person. You can't hasten their death. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Why do you think when you touch a person, you're hastening
them? That's what Chazal are concerned. Chazal are concerned that somebody in this status is so delicate. Even the simplest touch, again, if it's not therapeutic, the simplest touch could, you know, like that flickering candle. That's how Chazal perceive this status. Again, if it's therapeutic to help them feel better, we're not talking about that at all. Now, the Minchas Chinuch also echoes the point of, I think he's talking about the Alosa saying the Ten Commandments called Los Tirzach. And look what he says. Minchas Chinuch on the bottom, page 3. When is there Los Tirzach? So I understand a healthy person, an 18-year-old kid, you know, strapping young man, and you shoot him in the heart. Of course, that's Los Tirzach. Not just that. Ve'echad ha'hori gbari. Even if you kill a ghost ace, now it's true. If somebody's a ghost ace or a trefa, maybe we won't call you a tzach and put you to death. We won't execute in basin. But bidei shamayim nerog alav. The Hashem will consider that person to be a rotzeach. After rov ghost is in lamisim, even though we have a tradition, a rov that says ghost in lamisim, mikom akom, keivan she'ata chai, v'lo nasa b'maisa, the person, this ghost is considered alive enough that if you would kill him, it's as though you're killing a healthy person. What if he would say? What if Eliyahu would say? This guy's going to live for another. Eliyahu knocks on your door. I'm sorry. Eliyahu whispers in your ear. This guy, he's going to live for 3 more minutes. So could you hasten this person's death? There's no difference whatsoever when it comes to murder between killing a 5-year-old and killing a 100-year-old. Anytime you take the life of somebody who's alive, chayev. And therefore, even if you know they're going to die momentarily, you take that person's life, you're a rotzeach. Incredible, incredibly powerful words of the Minchas Chinuch. And therefore, we come to the question of, I understand that you can't cause somebody to die, hasten somebody's death. I understand that when somebody's a ghost ace, you can't even touch them for no reason, because it might hasten their death. But what about when a person is in a situation that they're attached to machines? Are you allowed to take off the machines, disconnect machines? That's what we're going to talk about now. And perhaps in that context, be able to understand what the halacha would be for DNR. That's how we started. We started with, of course, the mitzvah lo samal da dam riacha, but does lo samal da dam riacha apply when somebody's suffering terribly and they're about to die? That's what we have to figure out.
You are listening to benstorah.com.
Well, Shulchan Aruch in Shin Lamed Tes talks about the halacha we just spoke about. And that is, Hagoses Hareu Kechai L'chol Dvarav. Hagoses is alive. And therefore, you can't tie their cheeks, and you can't start, you know, putting oils on them, and you can't start washing them, and you can't do all the things to prepare them for death, and you can't pull the pillow out from underneath them, and you can't put them on the ground like we do right after a person dies. You can't put all kinds of things on, all kinds of things that you can't do. You have to wait till they die. Says the Rama, and this is the Rama, the next few lines are what we're going to be really focusing on for the rest of tonight and probably next week. V'chein asr ligrom l'meis sheyamis mehera. This is towards the top of page 4 of the Rama, Haga. You can't cause someone to die more speedily. You can't do anything to hasten death. Kagon. And we're going to have very specific examples in both directions. Some things that are mutter, some things that aren't. And we're going to have to figure out what are the rules that govern yes or no. Kago, Mishu Ghostes Man Aruch, Lo Yuchali Pari. There's somebody who's a ghost ace, and for some reason their body, their neshama just can't leave their body. They, everything's shutting down, but they're still alive. Says Rama, you can't pull out the pillow from underneath them. Ostala lihishame takaiva hakestas mitaktav, mikah sha'omri, because people say that there are certain types of feathers in the pillows that cause a person to live, and if you take away those pillows, you take away that special quality of these feathers and causing the person to die. So too, apparently there's a tradition that if you put the keys for the shul under his head, he would die. You can't put the shul keys under his head so that he could die. Also lost the maftechos based on Knesset Tachas Rosho Kadesh Yiparet. Again, we're talking about a guy who should be dead and ought to be dead and is in the dying process, and the neshama is just not leaving. However, and this is what I underline, this is going to be the key that all the poskim are going to have to grapple with and define. Aval im yesham davar shegorim ikuv yitzias hanefesh. If there's something that's holding the neshama back, preventing the neshama from flying away. Kagon, for example, this hospital or this nursing home or this place where this sick person is right next to a blacksmith's shop. And there's a banging. Then you'll be able to tell that person to stop chopping the wood, and the silence will, because that chopping the wood is keeping him alive, right? The neshama wants to fly out, but every time it hears the bang, it somehow stays. If you want to tell this person to stop chopping so that the neshama could just fly away, that's permitted. Or sheish melach al shono. Salt on the tongue of the patient, which is holding back the person from dying. I'm not saying the word keeping him alive, but it's preventing him from dying. There's a difference. Then mutil hasiro mishum. You're allowed to take off that salt. The salt on his tongue is preventing him from going. You're allowed to remove that salt. Look at the next six words, because this is what we have to focus on. De ein b'zeh maisa klal. That's not considered a maisa. Ella, what are you doing? Shemesir hamoneya. The two magical words of the Rama in this sugya. You're not hastening the death. You're removing the impediment for death. You hear the difference? You're not doing something to hasten the death. If you take the pillow away, or you put the keys of the shul under his head, that's hastening his death. If you take away that which is holding him alive, that which is preventing him from dying, and you withhold that which is monahim from dying, the salt which is monahim from dying, and the chop which is monahim from dying, you stop those things, that's okay. That's what we have to figure out. What's the parameter for something that is preventing somebody from dying or causing him to die early? The difference will be so important that will determine when you're allowed to disconnect machines from a person. There are going to be situations that you're not allowed to disconnect machines. There are going to be situations when you're allowed to disconnect machines. And there are going to be situations found that you're, it's a mitzvah to disconnect machines from somebody who's alive, based on the answer to your question. I'm going to have to figure what is the answer to the question. What is the difference between doing something that causes somebody to die earlier, as opposed to withdrawing something that is holding him back from dying. There's something, he should be dying, but there's something holding him back from dying. Remove it. That's okay. But to do something to make him die quicker, that's not okay. We'll have to figure out what that difference is. Now, regarding the question about stroking somebody's hand, I'll tell you another question. Let's say there's a fire. There's a fire in the building, in the hospital. So there happens to be, every hospital has its own, they have these inflatable rafts that are meant to slide down the steps of a staircase in the hospital. When they have to remove a patient because of a fire in the building, they can't, the elevators are not available. You have to take a person in a bed who's lying prone. They can't walk down the steps. They can't sit in a chair. They have something, it's like an inflatable raft, except there's no water. It just slides down the steps. And that's how they take patients down. So let's say there's a fire in the building. They have to remove a patient. But he's a ghost ace. You can't move him. If you move him, what might happen? He might die from the movement. You're allowed to take him out of a burning building? So says Rebbe Kveger, that's what we have here in the middle of page 4, to this bottom half of page 4, quoted in the Nishmas Avram. Rebbe Kveger, the Nishmas Avram quotes Rebbe Kveger on the right side of the piece that I selected, that I cut and pasted. I underlined it in blue. Im yesh dleika, if there's a fire, motzino some abayis. In other words, what is he saying? What's Rebbe Kveger teaching us? Tehainu, im zele tovas hagoseis. That's what we spoke about therapeutically, about rubbing their hands or something, massaging them. If it's for their betterment, that's mutter to lahaziza. Venerally, this would be true even if the person is not conscious. Shafilahim hu beli hakara mutter lasas kain. Even if they're unaware, you're still allowed to do things to help them feel better because maybe they'll wake up for a minute. Or maybe even though they seem to be unconscious, maybe they are aware of what's happening. And therefore, if it's something for their betterment, movement is permitted. Fine. Obviously, if you have to move them for some kind of procedure, some kind of medical reason, that would be permitted. And you'd, of course, be chayav. So let's say, for example, the nurse has to adjust their IV. And they have to move whatever they have to do to move their IV or reposition them so they don't get a bed sore. Totally. Of course, that's mutter. But what about, again, we're talking about somebody who's on the way out and there's nothing else they could do. What about, the hospital has a policy, they check your temperature and they check a patient's temperature and blood pressure every 4 hours, maybe more often in the ICU. If there's nothing that they could do for this patient anyway, guess what? The hospital is not allowed to check for blood pressure. What do you mean? It's a policy. Every patient, 4 hours. Sorry, not this one. Why? Because this patient is a ghost ace. There's nothing you could do to heal them. It's not like we're going to give them more medicines or adjust their meds or adjust something or give them something else. There's nothing to do. It's just a matter of time, a matter of a few hours, a day or two. There's nothing that you could do anyway. You have no right to check their blood pressure, to move them, to check their heart, to listen to their heart, and shift their body to put a stethoscope on them. If you're not, there's nothing you could do. There's no right to check their temperature. No right that a person that the hospital has to take to draw blood for a blood test. If there's nothing that they could do, if you want to check the blood so that they could see if there's another therapy or something else they could do to treat the person, okay, that's the tovasa hagoses, that's permitted. But if there's nothing they could do just because it's hospital policy that this is what we do to our patients, not to this one. Except as he very intelligent, the Nishma Savran very intelligent, he says, let's say you have a guy who's been in the hospital for a few weeks and he knows every 4 hours they check his blood and every 4 hours they check his blood pressure. All of a sudden, they stop checking. That's going to be a very bad, if he's awake and he's aware and he realizes that there seems to have been a conscious decision on the part of the hospital staff, they're no longer checking his vital signs, he might get the message that he's no longer vital. And that itself could be psychosomatically dangerous. And if such a person has that awareness, then of course they should check him just for the psychological benefit, even though he's a ghost and he shouldn't be touched, but the psychological benefit that he would have so he doesn't realize what status he's really in, that would be the minimum necessary to make him still feel like he's among the living would be appropriate, says the Nishma Sefra. Fascinating. Yeah, Vida is a very difficult discussion. So obviously, right, the Lashon Vidui is set up to answer your question, does it always work or not? The Lashon Vidui is, many people have said Vidui and lived long, fruitful lives. Many people have not said Vidui and died a moment thereafter. So let this saying of this Vidui be a zechus to have a long life. Yeah. If it's hooked up, it depends. Yeah. Okay. If it's hooked up already. If it's hooked up already. Okay. Now, we have 6 minutes before Marav, when we have to stop because I have to dive Marav also, that I'd like to talk about the beginning of, we did the background, so now we're ready to get into the sugya of a DNR. And I'd like to present the Shaila that was presented at Tzitz Eliezer from Shai Tzedek Haswell, where he was the Posek. And this is a Shaila in Chelek Yud Gimel Sim Pei Tes. And the question that was presented to him is there's a patient that there's nothing they could do. And the patient doesn't seem to have any independent life, but he's on a machine that's keeping him alive. So is there a way to disconnect the person from the machine? That's basically killing him, right? Or is there a way to, if the machine stops, to just not restart the machine? It runs out of oxygen. It has an oxygen tank. It runs out of oxygen. Just don't replenish the oxygen. The electricity runs out. Just don't, put in a new battery. So the question that's at hand is the following. Let's talk about a respirator, a ventilator. What does a respirator do? It blows air. It's nothing more than a high quality bicycle pump. That's all a respirator does. Yeah, it gives you exact, it's much more precise. It does it in the right way. It does it in the right place. But just pumps. What happens? You have lungs. Lungs are balloons. As long as you pump air into the balloons, the balloon gets bigger. You let the air out of the balloon, the balloon gets smaller. As long as you keep pumping, you could have a guy who is basically should have died and could have died and would have died, except for the fact that you keep on pumping air, oxygen into his lungs. The body is not able to pump oxygen. The body is not able to, make the chest cavity, right? When a person's diaphragm lowers, chest cavity expands, they inhale. When a person's diaphragm, is relaxed or whatever, the other way, and the chest cavity gets smaller, they exhale. The brain is no longer controlling the body to do that. What's left? The machine is doing it for him. So the machine is doing it mechanically for the person without the brain doing it. So in such a person, is it permitted to turn off the machine? That's the question. So the question is going to be based on what we just learned. We just learned that the Rama told us that there's something you're allowed to do and something you're not allowed to do. What you're not allowed to do is anything that will cause the person to die. What you are allowed to do is if there's something that's holding him back from dying, you're allowed to withdraw that. Right? The banging of the wood chopper or the salt under the person on the Tkosis's tongue that's preventing him from dying. It's keeping him here. It's preventing him from dying. That you're allowed to remove. You can't cause him to die. You could take away the impediment that's holding him back from death. So now, what's the difference between these two things? What's the difference? The Tzitz Eliezer wants to suggest, you know what the difference is? The difference between, which was your question, what's the difference between these two things? One's mutter, one's aser, which is really the question that we have to answer. The Tzitz Eliezer's take is the following. It's a question of, without the external situation, call it the salt, call it the wood chopper, what would the person do on his own? Would the person live on his own, or the person would be dead on his own? If the person would be alive on his own, then anything you do that will hasten death is aser. If the person would be dead on his own, except you're keeping him alive by this external thing like the wood chopping or the salt, then you're allowed to remove those things. I'll say it again because this is going to answer our question about removing a respirator from somebody who's in the last stages. If a person is really alive in the sense that his own body is breathing or could breathe, then if they're alive, you're just helping them. That means if you take something away, you're causing them to die. Because essentially they have life force in them. If on the other hand, there's no connection, the brain is not doing anything for them to breathe, and they are unable to breathe, and there's no body function, except you're keeping them alive. On their own, they wouldn't be alive. Their time for death had come already. But you're keeping them alive by mechanically pumping air into their chest. So then, since they don't have their own essential life, inherent life, it's just you're keeping them alive even though they should have died already, that would be permitted to disattach. A feeding tube we're going to talk about next week. Okay? So, Be'ez Hashem, we didn't get to DNR tonight. We did the introduction to the DNR. Be'ez Hashem, next week we'll talk about that. And we have to stop for Marv. And thank you for joining tonight. And Be'ez Hashem, next week we'll get into the various shitas with Tzitz Eliezer, Moshe Feinstein, Rosh Hashanah Zalman, and possibly Rav Schechter, what they hold about DNRs. What the possibility of what you're over on?
What are you over on?
Lo samal d'adam riacha. If you see somebody drowning, what do you have to do?
You have to save them.
If somebody has a heart attack, what do you have to do? CPR. What's the DNR? DNR says, don't.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.